In the final years of the century, audio, electronic, and visual surveillance techniques had become terrifyingly sophisticated. Indeed, the commander of Scotland Yard's anti-terrorist branch had it on record that he felt secrets were almost phased out. People rarely even muttered confidences on insecure telephones anymore, while faxes were reduced to generalities. If you wanted to be safe, you went outside to talk, and then only as long as you were away from areas that could be overlooked or followed with a parabolic microphone. In seconds, computer-controlled equipment, monitoring several hundred telephone numbers, could be alerted by a trigger word, and so lock on to a conversation, filch talk, depositing it onto a microchip that stored up to a previous 2 minutes of the exchange, eventually delivering a recording in its entirety. This is what had, in fact, happened during Tess Murray's dialogue with the drunken Michael. Within seconds of her closing the line on the call, men in London and Belfast were listening to the recording, while others were reading the transcript on their VDUs. The information, electronically dredged from the telephone line, included the location of both parties, the airport hotel outside Dublin, the room number, and the supposedly safe communications house, located in the town of Dundalk. Later, when briefing Bex, Commander Joe Bain commented that coincidence had played a large part in what followed. "We can't bitch about there not being a copper about when we needed him," the super said. A security service officer from the embassy was at the airport, putting documents onto a London flight. His immediate boss in Dublin had him on a safe phone fast, and in less than 10 minutes he was at the hotel, where he quickly identified Tess Murray, and for the next 2 hours carried out a long-range surveillance that took her to the border with the North. As soon as he was certain she was heading back to Belfast, the officer used his radio to send a coded message to the embassy. In turn, the embassy was quickly in touch with Military Intelligence HQ. Peace may have broken out, but some things never change. Two other things happened during that evening. First, a two-man RUC undercover team shadowed Tess back to Belfast, while a further two-man crew moved into the Republic, setting up shop within sight of the supposedly safe communications house in Dundalk. They were there to keep the house under observation. Nothing else was going to rock the boat at this stage. The men and women at the top, with the military, the Royal Ulster Constabulary, OS-13, and the Security Service, also to some extent the Republic's Garda and the Irish Military Intelligence, were all metaphorically holding their respective breaths. There was another common state of mind that few would express professionally. While Alchemist was himself a kind of terrorist, few tears had been shed for the bulk of his targets. The Yard's reaction to this new turn in events was to send a new boy out. Well, a new girl, actually. In the small hours of the day following her wedding, Bex Oleska was briefed by her superintendent, driven to Northolt, and flown to Belfast's Aldergrove Airport, where, under a thick cloak of secrecy, she was moved by helicopter to Springfield Road Barracks, to be briefed by the ranking OS-13 officer in the province. The senior anti-terrorist cop on the block was also a woman, Detective Chief Superintendent Liz Lydiard, 40-something, pug nose, full lips, untidy dishwater blonde hair, and large brown eyes ringed with dark circles, suggesting that she did more at night than simply collate intelligence reports. "You ready for this, Bex?" Liz's voice was soft and unmelodious, the voice of someone drained by the complexities of the place and the people. "It depends. I was on my honeymoon."
"Want to go back? In Maybrook, you'd be excellent for the job, but..."
"What's the job?"
"The commander said it could uncover Alchemist."
Count of around 7, while Lydiard made up her mind. Then she gave a short nod, which dropped hair in her eyes. She sighed wearily.
"Don't know, but it could well lead to something. Honeymoon?"
As though this had just registered, Bex explained, adding that if it really could lead to hard copy, she would like to see it through. Liz Lydiard scratched deeply into her dishwater hair, and with probable cause, As she explained the situation in short bursts that seemed to have expunged verbs from her vocabulary.
Theresa Murray, late 30s, early 40s, nailed by acoustic telephone scanner, possible alchemist handler, junior partner of the Belfast law firm Saunders, Rivers and Murray, low profile, no political affinities, travels regularly, might take us there, might not. Alchemists obviously got a well-organized team. She could be high in the pecking order. As far as we're concerned, and you'd want me to surveil? There was an argument. Security service wanted to bring in a team with all the bells and whistles. I said what we needed was a discreet, competent, unknown face. Told them I could provide. Looks promising, but Murray's obviously heading out, so you'd have to commit.
Beck said her new husband would understand, and she would like to commit, which, under the circumstances, was pretty big of her. Lydiard raised her eyebrows, an act that made the big brown eyes even bigger, and somehow distorted the dark rings, making her look like an opossum.
Lucky girl. Sounds like you hooked a gem. Price above rubies.
It was the only time Lydiard came close to cracking a smile. They gave Bex a float and a minder, and let her head into Belfast for some shopping.
Enough for 3 or 4 days, Liz told her. But don't stint yourself. We haven't run an op in months, so there's no cash shortage.
Bex returned with 3 basic outfits, including more jeans, and a natty long jacket with a flared waist and high collar. Very pop idolish. She also bought cosmetics, 2 pairs of shoes, and some neat underwear. They also gave her more money, a new identity, Ruth Elizabeth Nightingale, and credit cards, which they assured her would work. She almost said, "Don't have to sing in Berkeley Square, do I?" but kept her mouth shut. It was best not to add to the unoriginality when they were doing things by numbers. Late in the day, they said the target was heading back to Dublin, so they showed her some grainy photographs. Matte prints of Tess Murray, with 2 sheets of widely spaced typing that laid out her life in the same kind of shorthand used by Detective Chief Superintendent Lydiard. The target was now coded Beecher. H. Beecher Stowe Ho Ho Ho, does it? Beck thought, with a smile. Finally, it was back to Heathrow, where she boarded the late flight to Dublin, after telephoning Charlie, who said he was having an interesting time and might be going to Scotland for a few days. It was almost 11 by the time Bex checked into the Gresham. A phone call provided her with Tess Murray's room number and the news that they had a monitoring service at work. "She's meeting a brother legal eagle at 10 in the morning. Don't know where. Good if you'd tag along." Bex knew they must have some kind of secure line, for the paranoia filtered down to all levels, and the disembodied, rather sexy, deep brown voice gave her an emergency number. Unless it was guaranteed safe in 12 languages, nobody would talk within 4 walls. As she dropped quietly into sleep, Bex wondered what the hell Charlie was talking about. Going to Scotland?